Alrighty, hello everybody and welcome back to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And this is the first one back after a little pause. Well,
have you missed us?
And we say it's a pause, but I've been getting messages from people on Instagram saying, have you enjoyed your break? And things have been different, but I'm not sure how much of a break it's really been. I wanted to call this episode Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. So that gives you a little bit of a clue as to where I am. So we thought what we'd just do for this time is have a little bit of a roundup. What's been going on? We've got to get in touch with each other again. New things have come into the picture. So we just thought we'd just kind of chat that through. We don't have a useful topic for you this week. We don't have a list of practical suggestions or things to do. But, you know, this is real life. This is where it is. This is what's happening for both of us in our art and creative world. And I hope that some of that is going to be useful for wherever you are.
I think that I love conversations like that I hear from other people, because it makes you feel like, oh, they feel like I do, or they have that problem I have. Sometimes better than the practical ones. I'm not saying we should always just turn up and just talk to each other, but
yeah.
And I'm just really curious to know what's been going on with you anyway. So it seems like a good excuse.
And also it's just kind of that feeling of being nosy, isn't it? It's what everybody says. It feels like you're here. I don't have a hot cup of tea today. Have you?
I've got a very tepid.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Dregs of a cup of tea.
Tepid is no good. You've got a very nice mug, though.
I know. My mug, I wish everyone could see this mug. It's a local ceramicist, and he makes these cups and plates and things with this kind of, it's like almost, is it Ralph Steadman who does the?
Yes, it's almost like ink drawings. And also it's a lovely shape too.
And he hand makes every cup. So they're not molded. He makes them all on his, whatever they call that thing. Sorry, ceramicist, a potter's wheel. He makes them all on there. Cause I asked him, a friend of mine is a ceramicist, said, oh, he must make those in molds cause it would take forever. And I asked him and he said, does take forever and I don't make them in a mold.
Yeah.
But
the lovely things like that make a huge difference. The only thing with mugs is it's got to pass the lip test.
Oh, it's perfect for
that.
It's
got to pass the handle test and the lip test.
Yeah.
And I always feel a bit weird about doing that in a, you know, if I'm in a shop or anything. And I'm like, okay, I've got to see what it's like when I actually put it up as if I'm going to drink from it.
I know. I should just tell you, if you are in North Yorkshire, we're talking about this, and it's not fair not to mention him. It is the Courtyard Pottery in Grassington. It's on the main street in Grassington, but it's down a little alleyway. So you just need to walk up the lovely cobbled street and look down the alleyway. Courtyard Pottery, Grassington.
Okay. While we're at that then, my favourite coffee mug, I don't drink very much coffee, but I do have one after lunch usually. And my favourite mug is in a mug from Linda Bloomfield. And it's a square, slightly short. It's perfect for a good sized cup of coffee. It's not a cup of tea mug. It's a coffee mug for definites, and it just has a lovely smooth handle, and the glaze is just soft and simple colour. So it's not decorated like yours, but yeah, favourite mugs and the little treats they bring. Right, moving on from tea then.
Right, so what have you been doing? You've been doing a lot of wild swimming and walking. I can see that from Instagram stories since I last saw you.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a funny sort of summer, really. No major travels, obviously, can't be bothered. But my daughter is 16, so we've had GCSE results and obviously teenage social life and friend commitments to be considered. My son headed off on a little bit of a trip to Italy, where he was meeting his girlfriend, who is Romanian, who he met in Manchester. So she was coming from EU, he was coming from UK, and there were different rules for each of them. And they met and stayed with my parents for their isolation and then traveled to Venice. So he's had an adventure. I picked him up at the airport at about midnight last night. So he's had an adventure. GCSEs went well. She was over the moon. very happy. So that was good. And now she's at Reading Festival, having smuggled a lot of vodka in water bottles. Anybody want to know how you de-shrink wrap water bottles so that you can replace them with vodka and then shrink wrap them again with a hairdryer so nobody can tell? That's what you've got to do. So we've been having discussions about how much is sensibly consumable and how much is simply ridiculous. So we've been having a summer of working around. That's really been our priority, to give kind of both of them a feeling like they've had a holiday break. Yeah, but we were away in Dartmoor with three lovely girls. They were fun. They just chatted and ate sweets, and we went on walks, and then we've toed and froed and done the same with friends of ours, just grown-ups.
Now, what I saw that was interesting, though, to me, I mean, not that your family life isn't interesting, of course, but interesting from the podcast perspective, was you look like you've been doing a lot of sketchbook work. And I know you've said on here before that you don't always do that on vacations. And so what changed?
So what changed was firstly the fact that the children either A, weren't there, or were asleep till about 2 p.m. So, or weren't interested in doing anything with me anyway. So I'd no longer have that sort. So I felt like I had a little bit more of my own time. And also, at the beginning of August, I said that I was going to spend the month I could sort of not creating. I've got a group of work that is sort of finished. I've got to go into the studio and visit it and check, but I think it's finished. We'll come on to that in a minute. And I just wanted to have this pause that we talked about last time, a kind of pause, a reset, not race straight into the next set of work. And that really means stopping and just gathering, just regrouping. And I have been doing that with a group of artists who are all established and experienced. And this was kind of my little bit of a birthday treat to myself, really, to do this and set this up as a place for these kind of conversations to happen. Obviously, everybody's got very different work, and to push and nudge each other. And that has been amazing. We haven't done lessons, but that kind of communication has been really interesting. And to see people having little breakthroughs that you know are going to be significant has been really interesting. And just to have people prod without any sense of, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, this is a course, this is going to finish. It's just a gentle kind of unfurling. And that's been really good. So what I've been doing in the sketchbook was, when I was away, what I'm interested in is a mix between what I feel when I'm out in exposed places like Dartmoor. So you mentioned wild swimming. The thing about wild swimming for me is it's not about really how it looks. It's about how it feels. It's about that feeling of testing yourself, the exhilaration, the abandon, the fact that it's just fun, it's kind of all consuming. It's that sort of body experience of it. And that's what I take from the landscape. And then urban, I've been doing some urban visual gathering as well, and I want to find a way to merge them. So that's all just ongoing. Yeah. So the sketchbook work in Dartmoor was, I was in Dartmoor, so that's what it was. But I've been thinking much more about really what it is that I'm learning from it. So although it might be a landscape, what I really want to do is explore maybe the extremes of marks in there and purify that down. And so that's the element that I want to take back to the studio rather than any kind of landscape drawing. And it's just having time to let all those kind of thoughts settle and have other people to rebound them off. So yeah, it's been a really good month.
Oh, I'm glad you did, because you talked about that idea before of getting some people together, and then you thought you might do it on your own. Yeah. And I know how these things go. We think, no, I'll do this, no, I'll do that, no, I'll do this, and then eventually you get to whatever the right idea is.
Yeah, I think it's because it's been gentle with sort of no expectations.
Yeah.
That it's just allowed it to kind of follow on, and we're going to continue until we get bored with each other, maybe. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But
yeah.
I think it's important. And I don't know, you must find this too. you know, when we're doing our own work and we're doing things for other people, you've got to take time to feed you and look after you as well.
Yeah.
And that can be hard to find.
One of the things that really helped me is I've built in sharing my work into my membership and into the course that I teach.
Yeah.
So that means I actually get creative time in when I'm teaching, because I want to show what I'm doing. And mm-hmm. I don't show it as, it's not like, look, do what I'm doing, pick mm-hmm. up this brush, use this color. Mm-hmm. More from the perspective of showing, like I made a video the other day for the course showing my drawers of shame. It's going through my plan chest and showing all my horrible rubbish, you know, these didn't work out paintings on paper, just so people can see that everybody has files of these things. And it's not because you're a beginner that things don't work out. It's because everybody has them. So I'm glad I've built that in. And going forward in my membership art tribe, I want to make that more of that next year. So that as I'm working, I just film myself, and I like making videos. So that makes it, you know, I enjoy editing them together. I don't make them fancy. I don't do anything flashy with them, but I just like showing the process. And for next month's theme, we're doing layering, building up paintings in layers. So I filmed myself working on my new process that I'm experimenting with of building a lot, which is I'm building layers of collage and neutral paint and collage and neutral paint and sanding and collage and trying to build up really cool textures before I ever start making my big gestural marks, which then I'm hoping to be able to leave because they're on a rich, interesting background pretty much as they are. So I did a film of that and I'm editing it together now. That kind of thing means I am being creative and I'm teaching. And if I can keep that going, I enjoy that. At the moment, I enjoy that process. So that's how I feed into it. But I find it more difficult in the lull periods because I don't have much to share in the lull periods. It's like, I don't do all the things you're doing. I really just, my brain veggies out and nothing happens in those periods. So then I don't have much to share. But anyway, that's what I've been doing. And I'm really loving this new process that's developing. I made this panel. Well, this triptych behind me, I think is 236 inches and a 60 inch.
Yeah.
That's how big it is along. And I started it by building up these layers of collage. So I had them all laid out on big tables and I was putting collage on, paint, just in neutral colors, sanding. And they looked amazing at one point. And I thought, should I do this?
Yeah.
Should I do this as the painting? Should I stay with building up neutrals and just keeping getting these textures until they're amazing? That might be for next time, because I did have an idea that I wanted to try. So I've stuck to my idea of the gestural marks on top. And it's really exciting. I'm really enjoying it because it gives me both things that I want: richness and history, and then excitement and energy. And then I'm going back and I'm spending a long time making subtle glazes and, you know, putting in complexity, even more complexity, but not messing with that, the energy of the first part. And it's really good fun. And serendipitously, I got an email from a gallery, which I won't name at the moment, but it's a very nice place. And I'm going for a meeting next week or the week after to talk about a solo exhibition in May. May to July, so I'd have 6 weeks, quite a big space, but I haven't been yet to see it, but they sent me a film of someone else's show there, and it looks lovely and it looks big. And she said to me, she did a studio visit and we chatted, and she said, you could have the whole thing, or we could invite someone else if you think it's too much space. We could do, and there'll be some ceramicists there. And I'm like, no, nobody else is having this. I'm having this. So it means that I need to make a lot of work between now and May, because I'll have a lot of space to fill. And it will be about abstract landscape. which means I'm, because that's their plan and that's what she saw when she came. So that means my neutral idea will go on hold until after I've got this done.
Yeah.
And then, but I think it won't be a big selling opportunity, particularly, I don't imagine. It'll be an opportunity to really design and to design a show, which is like something that sounds, that's just really exciting to me to think about how I, what I want to say and how I want to display my work and how, which pieces I want to sit together and what I want it to be about. And it sounds crazy, but I, the, whether it's a great place for selling paintings almost isn't, I don't really care. I want to have the opportunity to say, look, this is what I'm saying with my work. So it'll be exciting. So I'm going up for my meeting next week and all being well, that'll be in May.
So that's your next really big project.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my winter project. All sorted. So that thing about Stop the World, I want to get off. It's already, the book comes out in October and now my next 6 months are planned.
You see, this is the thing, is that there's never really a pause, is there? But I think what pauses can do, and what we have to be careful of, is always just being busy doing the things. And when there's a pause, there's a chance to recognize what is it that you really want. For example, you know, you were going to be doing Manchester Art Fair. And then you said, no, I don't want to do that. And maybe by saying no to that has given space for this. It's about recognizing really where your direction is, isn't it? And I think, when we have these sort of discussions in the group we've been having, what's been really interesting is people have been sharing. So where are we now? 2021. People have been sharing, you know, this is an image that I did in 2019 that I really felt had something. And now I'm ready for it. And that's come up a couple of times. And it's just interesting for me as well that we get these kind of glimpses of things and they just sort of hibernate for a while. Yeah. And then they come out when they're ready. And that's, I find that really reassuring, actually, in this, the fact that everything is fast paced and there's this demand for like, what's next? What now? What have I got to do? The fact that you just know that things take time and we have to relax into it. I suppose that's what the pause element is about for me.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And actually, what you've just said, I was just thinking that also relates to the way we want. I've said before that I wanted to teach because I thought I didn't want my paintings to be like my source of income. I didn't want the pressure, that pressure on my creativity. But when I thought that, I thought that doesn't make any sense. Like, that really doesn't make any sense. I should be selling. So I book things like Manchester Art Fair, or I put a series online and sell it. And, but honestly, it's never been the driving factor for me. And now I'm seeing, when this gallery came and said about this exhibition, I was like, yes, that's what I want. Because I don't have the space to hang all these paintings up, and I don't have the people to invite in to come and look at them. I need someone else to do that for me because I can't do that. But it's not about recognition, and it's not about, not that there's anything wrong with those things, but there's something else in it for me and I don't quite know what it is yet. But just trusting, like you said, that idea that I had a few years ago, I don't want to be launching collections regularly and doing all that. I just don't think I do. But what do I want? And my Ted Hughes exhibition fell through because the place is not opening to people because of COVID. They're still keeping their restrictions, which means this was, for anybody who didn't know, I was hoping to have an exhibition of those paintings in his house. But just because that fell through, now something else has come along, which is equally interesting. And maybe this will be the way I want to go. And I think we have to listen to those voices about more than our paintings, even about the way we want to do things, what we want to, how we want to show our work. Showing it in a book, that works for me. It's, and I have even sold a couple of the Ted Hughes paintings before I put them up for sale. But I'm not that, you know, I don't really, it's not.
But this is the thing, isn't it?
If I put them all on a fire now, it wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, well, would it not, really?
Not really. If I've got photographs, I think now, I'm not going to, because that would be silly. Someone might want one of them. But I think it wouldn't. I think they're in a book.
Yeah.
Which I have, but I didn't bring a copy to show you. I have a copy of it. They're in there now, so they're immortalized.
Yeah.
And I'm past them, and they could, because the exhibition hasn't worked out.
The experience of them in a book, I think a book gives you an opportunity to deliver a whole story and the experience of them in a different way than obviously just only one painting would do. But the feeling of a painting that's it's just really interesting, isn't it? So for me, the painting as an object is a precious thing. And that's why I love the tactileness of it. I love the uniqueness of it. I love the detail that you can see that you can't see on screen.
Mm.
And just feels different. Like, I just feel like a painting has a soul. Like, it's gone through a life of whatever it's gone through in order to come into existence. It is like being born. It is like creating something. And it's there, and it has a kind of energy imbued into it. And it's a funny, like, even with prints can be brilliant. They can be brilliantly photographed. They can look fantastic. They never have the same kind of soul as a real painting does. And I think that's why, for me, the real thing is really important. But I totally get what you're saying in terms of, like, when it's done, you kind of, it's not that you don't care what happens to it. It's just that you're ready to move on to the next thing. You've done your work with it.
And what you just said, some kind of crystallized in my head. I like the book because I can show the whole story.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the exhibition because I can tell a story. Mm-hmm. So I suppose that's what's my driver somewhere in there is, I like selling an individual painting, but somehow it feels like it's been divorced from its context.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, please, everybody, don't think I'm saying that I think there's anything wrong with, I buy individual paintings all the time. Mm-hmm. I love buying paintings. It's just a realization that I've been having that. I think for me, it's about telling the story. I love nothing more than an exhibition that you go to where there's maybe sketches and sketchbooks and finished paintings, and you really immerse yourself in that artist as you go around. And I know some people believe the art should speak for itself. I mm-hmm. like it when there's lots of information as well. So I'm getting it all into all my senses. I'm thinking and I'm looking, I'm feeling. So I think that's why, for me, the book appealed, and now why this appeals less so than putting paintings up for sale and selling them individually. But I agree with everything you say. They have, you know, I love the way they look and feel. So, and perhaps I wouldn't put them on the bonfire. Maybe I wouldn't. That seems a bit extreme.
I have put paintings in a crusher before, but only when I
must have felt good if they were bad ones.
Yeah, that was quite good. That was like, and it's so noisy. Actually, I've got a painting I'm going to completely set this one.
Oh, it's that one I really like.
Like, do you want it?
Probably, yeah.
I was just thinking that if I just really sand it down, I can use it as a panel for doing drawing on, but it needs to be really flat.
It's been behind you for a while, and I think I saw it when I came to your house, and I said, oh, I like that one. And you said, that one, there's nothing to that one.
No, it's not that there's nothing to it. It was a painting that hit that, like, I did the first stages of it and really loved them and couldn't move through it.
And I like those. See, I like the energy of the first stages. So maybe that's why it appealed to me.
Yeah.
I like when I saw it, I liked it, but I can't remember all of it now. But I know when I saw it, I thought, oh no, she's going to paint over that.
Maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I should just include it in Open Studios and just the thing is, it's the old version of the Artist Surfaces panels. So it's got it's got these quite heavy cross braces on the back.
Right.
I cannot ship this. Really, seriously. Like the cost of shipping
it locally, yeah,
will be a nightmare. But yeah, maybe I should just say, but I don't know. I don't know what I feel about that. Here is work. Do you want it when I'm no longer fully in love with it? Is that bad? Killing your paintings.
That we always have this discussion. We've had this discussion in my group a few times about if someone asks you for something and asks you, please don't paint anymore. Please let me buy it as it is. Should you say yes, have it? Or should you say, no, it's not finished? And there's no right answer, is that? I kind of err on the side of it's cruel to not let the person have the thing they love just because you've got your vision for it. But on the other hand, I understand if you don't want to let it go because you don't want it hanging in someone's house, especially if you know them and other people are going to go around and see it.
I've done both. And I think that yes, you can have it, but I still need it for half an hour just to do what I feel it needs. But I promise I won't make any radical changes. But that was when it was a painting that I felt was at that stage anyway. And it's somebody else just saying, oh, yeah, I like it as it is. It can be quite a useful thing sometimes, because I know sometimes we can just redo work and redo it and it doesn't necessarily help. But and I've also had paintings where I've said, no, I still need it because it's still part of a process for me. Yeah. But this is not part of a process. But I agree, the reason that it's been here for so long is that I love parts about it. I don't want to redo it in its existing form.
If I were you, I'd stick it up at Open Studios without any kind of price on it even, and just see if anyone asks you about it, if you're not sure.
Yeah, well, that maybe brings me on. That's the other thing, because our Open Studios is normally in June. And this year is in September. And in my head, it was kind of the end of September. And then I actually checked the dates and it's the 17th, which is fairly soon. And I haven't done any of the normal stuff for it. And I'd spoken to my framer a while ago and we were doing new frames. And I was like, okay, can you get me a corner sample? I want to test it. And then when I got back, I chased him and he said, yeah, all those framing moldings are out of stock until November.
Everything's out of stock.
Everything is out of stock. Like these little ones, you see these little ones that I was talking about before that I said were going to be this paperback meditation series. Can't get them. Can't get the boards. Yeah. Haven't been able to do any more since. And every week I go on and I check. And at one point there was a stock due delivery date and then it's just shifted. It's really frustrating. So, but these paintings have got to be framed. I'm sure they'll look lovely, but I'm just about to spend an absolute fortune on framing, which is not my number one choice of framing, which is a bit like, eek.
Yeah, it is. It's a nightmare at the moment. Canvases, panels, wood, even in the hardware store. Mm-hmm. We can't get birch ply because I was going to have some panels made. So I'm looking at marine ply now because that should at least be good for not warping. But everybody's having these. Well, I don't know if they're having them worldwide or if it's us and our Brexit or if it's COVID and it's worldwide. I have no idea. Maybe you could let us know when you drop something in the comments when you hear this podcast, because it's very frustrating and it's quite freaky to go to the supermarket and see half the things not there. Mm-hmm. Like it. Yeah,
I know.
A bit bleak.
It is a bit bleak. It is a bit bleak. So I had a kind of panicky, lovely, I had to drop round yesterday. Yesterday I started with a meeting at 8 a.m. and I thought all I want to do is have some studio time this afternoon before call I had to do at 4. And it was honestly, it was one thing after another of, you know, things that needed sorting and resolving. And that's why I'm like, stop it. I want to get off, because I feel like I've come from this lovely nurturing space where I kept things going, but also had time. And I'm like, I want that.
Yes.
I want that. And yet my list of things to do and things to check in with and you know, I need to get my sole trader tax return done and all of that stuff. And I'm I don't want to be a grown up anymore.
I know. I had to get a new accountant because my old one messed something up, and I found a new accountant and I felt like job done. I found a good accountant. And then he sent me an email saying, right, I need da 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 da. And it's like, oh,
just make
you just do that.
I know, my poor son going off, and he was taken because we were away. So he had to take himself off, do all the online forms, do all the check-in, do the passenger locate. I mean, honestly, it was ridiculous. And he said, there's just so much admin to do for traveling. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, just being a grown up is hard.
It is. And why can't we just stand there and paint? Why can't we just paint?
Wow, wow, wow.
I know. I mean, really, seriously, this is not a problem. This is the problem of having to send things to your accountant means that you have an accountant, which means that you can eat and pay your bills, which means you don't really have a problem. So we should just say that. It's just that it's always this good thing of
there's always something. There's always something.
Yeah.
And everybody has it on different things, stuff all the time, big stuff, shitty stuff, personal stuff, worky stuff.
I got a message from someone who was very angry with me at the end of the free course. They were angry that there was a paid course, and sometimes when people can't afford it, they get angry and they take it out on you. And this person was angry at me for selling the course and then accusing me of being so lucky, and I didn't understand how lucky I was, and I didn't understand how privileged I was. And it was funny because she said something like, and you would have been given a car and your parents would have bought you your first house. And I'm like, who's that? That person, my parents didn't have any money to buy me anything. But the point was, she was right and wrong in that I am very lucky. I feel very lucky, but I'm willing to bet that she has never worked as hard as I have as well on top of that. So I'm lucky, but it's 11:30 and I'm sitting there the other night signing books. You know, it's 7 a.m. and I'm already working before I've even had a cup of coffee because I've got so much to get done. And I'm not complaining because I really enjoy it and I wouldn't do it if I didn't. But I do work incredibly hard, as do you. And that is, it's sometimes when beginner painters on my course, I have some beginners and they'll say, how do I, you know, somebody said the other day, how do I learn how to draw? I want to be able to draw better. And it's like, well, you have to work really hard at it and learn to draw. There isn't a shortcut. How do I learn how to get textures and layers like you do? Well, you have to work hard at it. You have to be patient and willing to put the layers on and take them off. And I don't even know how I got onto this, but we are complaining, and we shouldn't be complaining. But on the other hand, we do both work really, really hard.
I like a good complain. I think a good complain is important. Just don't get stuck there. That's my thing.
Yeah.
Complaining can be useful because sometimes you can realize, like you say, how stupid you sound, how unimportant it really is, you know, how things put into context, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Whereas if you don't say it to yourself, I mean, I don't necessarily mean complaining to other people about what they've done wrong. I don't like that. Yeah. The amount that happens. So again, going back to open studios, you know, I haven't been involved in the organization element of it anywhere near as much as I used to be this year. I'm still zone leader for our area. So I've got to do a map and work out everyone's delivery routes and all of that sort of stuff later today. But I went to pick up what we've got as a studio guide this year for the lady who was doing it. And, you know, we were having a little good-natured grumble about the people who complain but don't step up and do anything.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
There's always those.
It's really difficult. But I think people do massively underestimate, you know, how much work goes into it. And you know what? I underestimate for me. So I've been looking back at what I wanted to do this year. So I have a kind of January kickstart the year and then September as a back to school thing. And I've looked, and I was sharing with somebody yesterday, and she's like, what happened to that course? And what happened? I was like, yeah, it hasn't happened. Do you know what? It hasn't happened. There hasn't been time for it. I still underestimate in my own time, in my own week, in the year, what can get done because of how long things take.
And I think that's both of our problem, because I do the same, which means that we're always too busy. So that's why I'm always working hard, because I think, oh yeah, I can handle that. Oh yeah, I can do that. Oh yeah, I can do that. And then it's too much.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I think I've really, that has really changed on that front is that previously I would have been frustrated with myself or cross with myself that I hadn't done it, or that things maybe weren't, you know, working, or maybe I'd set goals and I wasn't reaching them or whatever it was, and it must be my fault because I hadn't done anything. And now I'm much better at going honestly to myself, well, did that happen for a good reason? I.e., did you not do it? You know, and if it was because I didn't do it, well, if I didn't do it, was I busy doing something else? Yeah. Well, was that other thing more important? Yeah. If the other thing wasn't more important, that's where you learn from it. It's like, well, so next time you've got to try and figure it out a different way. And it's just, there isn't a straightforward solution to that stuff, is there? I mean, it's just, No. You know, it is just endless cycle of, hey, I cocked it up. I didn't do as well as I wanted. Hey, that went well. Onwards and upwards, one or the other.
I think I'm having to learn as well. I think we've talked about this before. I've got something in my brain that if there's stuff to do, I've got to do it as fast as possible, with the idea that that'll be out of the way then and I can relax. But there's always something. So I'm always, and I'm preparing an advanced course for the people who were finishing at the time of recording. This is the last week of my 10-week course, and there's a follow-on advanced course for anyone who wants it, only for the people who took that course, so I'm not marketing it here. But I'm preparing the content for that, and there's a 3-week gap until we even start, and I've got the curriculum all worked out, and I know what I want to say, but I have to record the videos and edit them and everything. And I'm having to constantly remind myself, no, you don't have to. Yes, I'd love to get that done by next week, so every module was recorded, edited and uploaded, because then it would feel like it's off my plate. But in doing that, I'm stressing myself beyond, because I've got other things to do as well. So that's just extra stress. So I'm having to learn to say, no, write it down for another week. Like, just make sure that you've got time to get those things recorded. You don't have to push to do everything. And I particularly do that if I'm doing something for someone else. So we did a module each for Kellyanne Conway. And she said to me, oh, nobody's ever sent them.
Kellyanne Conway is the American.
Is she going to work for Trump?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What's the right name?
Kelly Wynne Conrad.
Kelly Wynne Conrad. Kelly, I am so sorry. Kellyanne Conway is the one. Yeah.
Love it.
So sorry, Kelly Wynne Conrad. That's not a nice thing to call you. But we did that for her, and I was the first one with my stuff in.
Yeah.
And I didn't need to be, but it was just, okay, that's off my plate. But like I say, there's never a time where I go, yeah, everything's off my plate now, I can relax. So it's a stupid pressure. But I remember somebody mentioned it when you were doing a chat with your people. Somebody else said the same thing. So I know I'm not alone in that. It is a thing that some people have. But I really envy other people. And you're one of them who seems to be able to say, well, I'll get to that when it's time. And then you did deliver it on time to Kelly. You just didn't deliver it like the very moment she asked for it. And sometimes if it's not for someone else, you'll just say, yeah, I didn't get that done. I'll do it next month, or I won't do it. I'll do something else. I envy that. That's a good pressure valve, because I think you need that.
I think I'm better at saying yes when it's doing things for other people than doing things for me. So I'm thinking of three things that I have committed to do for other people to no benefit from me, because I am not organized enough to have done my own mini course. Doesn't matter whether it's on, you know, sketchbooks or color or whatever I thought it was going to be. One of those things I have had the Facebook page for 5 years. And I still haven't done it. So there is something that is holding me back from that. And a lot of it is because there still always seem to be other things that are more important to do. And it will happen eventually. I know it will happen eventually. But it's maybe it's because I have this thing where I like working with other people, whereas when somebody invites me to do something, I say, yeah. That's easy. That's just easier for me to say yes to. And when it's on my own, I'm like, I can find anything else to do.
Yeah.
Not the painting so much. But
something you're not sure about. Hmm. You're not sure about that you want to do anyway.
It's not that I'm not sure I want to do it. It's just that whenever I sit down to think about it, it explodes into such a massive, great big, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this, I could do everything. And then it becomes too daunting. And I'm not very good at going, right, pare it back. This is what you want to include. This is what's not to include, because I want to give everything. And that's kind of what I've been looking at what we've got in Connected Artists. And, you know, I've just created a monster. Basically, I've spent 3 years creating the most incredible monster content. And now we're kind of, you know, working out. And I don't want to take any of that away. I don't want to make it so that, you know, when you join, you only get access to the first XYZ bit. I hate it. I hate it when I join something and I don't have access to everything. I want all of it straight away so that I can choose. But that's how I've created it. But for people who aren't like me, I think they come in and they go, holy smoke, where do I start? So that's what we're working on that. So that feels important, but it's another thing to be done.
See, I have several course ideas, which I've had mapped out in Kajabi for a few years, and they haven't happened. And it's not that problem. It's not like, oh, I've got the outline, but the truth is, I really don't want to. I'm not excited about those topics the way I am about the one that I teach once a year.
Yeah.
So that's the thing for me. It's like, oh, yeah, I could. I know I could set that up. I know I could create it. Yeah. I know I could sell it, but I wouldn't be excited. So maybe that's part of it too. Maybe you haven't got the spark of excitement about doing it yet because it's not quite the right thing, do you think?
I think that might be a thing with the colour one, because...
Yeah, I've got a colour one all mapped out.
Yeah,
I'm... Maybe we should put our colour one together and then get someone else to do it.
Well, I think the thing with colour is, I think I've got a very personal take on colour and what I want to... particular ideas and ways that I'd like people to test and try and experiment with colour. But I feel that even to do that, you still have to start with, okay, what is some of the boring basics of it? And that's the bit I can't be arsed with. And then I kind of think, yeah, and then lots of people know that already. So does that just feel like padding? But I still think it needs to be in there. You know, you can't do a course on color without doing some of the basics. So you're right on that part of it. But overall, three ideas I've got for things, and I'm just overcomplicating it. I'm like, well, could they be a stage one and stage two and stage three, and they unite? In which case, which order would make sense for it to be done first? I'm just overcomplicating it. It's absolutely
it's your human design open head.
Yeah,
it's the open head which I don't have, which brings in all the possibilities. Yeah. I tend to close down the possibilities if anything too quickly, like, right, I've got that, da, da, da. But you've got all those possibilities. The best way, I think, when you've got that way of working is what you've done in your, and we've said this before, but what you've done in your sketchbook or ideas thing just recently is to just get a group of people together and do it with them without any expectations or preconceptions. And then you develop it as you go, and then it's done. At the end, you've got a course, and then you can sell it to other people.
I know that logically.
It's so much easier because you will have ideas in that which you wouldn't have by sitting thinking.
I know. And the people please are part of me, kind of, that's the way that I know I would work best. The people please are part of me is worried I wouldn't be able to deliver on that. I'm kind of quite excited about doing it now, but I also, as a result of this summer, you know, I want to have the time with my own work, and we've got Open Studio to get ready for.
Yeah.
And then I've got Manchester, and I really want to get into this new work in a different way, honestly, without thinking about looking after anybody else.
Creatively. Which makes perfect sense. So then that makes perfect sense. Not to bother.
But it's really painful. Say, it's really painful to wait.
Just about the people pleaser thing, I just want to say a little bit of CBT. If you think back, have you ever launched anything in your art career where you didn't, where people said, you know what, Alice, that was a disappointment. You let me down. I thought I was going to join your membership. I thought I was going to come and do your workshop. I thought I was going to come and look at your exhibition. And I really enjoy it. And actually, it was crap. You didn't put any effort in. It didn't deliver what I wanted. And I'm disappointed. I'm going to say no. I'm going to answer for you. No, you've never done that. So why would it be the case now? It wouldn't.
No.
It wouldn't. You would work really hard to if you decided to do it. But yeah, I agree with
you. But the time needs to be right.
You need to have a lot of time and space and energy, mental energy.
Yeah. So what we're saying then? January. End of January. February.
Whenever you feel like you've got a break from wanting to paint, I think. Whenever you feel like right now I could take a...
Well, it's not even a break from wanting to paint, is it? I mean, it could be, like you say, a mini, you know, if it was like a mini thing. I mean, I was writing earlier in the week about, you know, still, you know, it should just be about still just being the artist, doing what's natural and sharing that. And then I think, yeah, but is that enough for anybody? Does anybody actually want... What's in that for them, apart from we just like to be nosy and see it? I don't know. I feel like it needs more teaching points.
You mean what's in it from them to watch you doing your...
Yeah.
How you do it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what people want. I mean, because my course is very unusual in that I don't tell people how to do anything. Like, I really don't tell them how to do anything. I teach them how to... understand what they want to do, which is really difficult to teach. But at the beginning, what they want, lots of people, is for me to show them how I do it. If I was to say in module one or two, if I was to say, let's scrap all this finding ourselves and let's me just paint and show you what I do, I think at least half the people would go, oh, phew, good. Yes, I'm in for this. Because it's much harder for someone to investigate themselves than it is for them to watch you do it. And there isn't, even with all of YouTube, there isn't a lot of content available for people to watch when they want to know how an accomplished, you know, someone they consider good abstract painter paints a painting. There's a lot of YouTube videos show you how someone makes a quick and easy abstract painting. I love those, you know, in half an hour, here's, I squeeze some paint out, I squeegee it along and there's an abstract. But I think that course of you showing people, if you wanted to, your process, just filming yourself making a series of work, enough.
Yeah, I'm just so... And then
you need a videographer to follow you around.
I know, but then I don't want to be watched when I'm painting.
I know. Yeah, no, you do need
it's
to
put tough this, you know, really. I do think you know, anybody, you know, if you know any artists who are more organized than me, but any of you artists who film themselves, create courses. I know Gabriella Buckingham is just coming to the end of her experimental still life, which sounds like it's been amazing. I was so tempted to do that.
I would have liked that if I had the time, but I was good at teaching my course.
Yeah, and hats off to her. And I know that she has been filming and teaching, you know, for a while on other platforms. So it was really good to see that. But and there are lots of people, you know, Laura Horn does a lot, Kelly does a lot, Karen Stamper we've spoken to. But actually, you know, you do learn from watching people. But this goes back to what we were saying at the beginning, the amount that it takes to put these things together, hats off to anybody who does it. And I think when you do it, it is really rewarding. I know that you find what you do really rewarding. I love running the membership. I find that really rewarding. But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. You know, sometimes when I see these things and they're small prices and I'm like, that's a crazy amount of money for the amount of effort that has gone in to do that alongside everything else.
I suppose when it's a small price, though, they're banking on a lot more people joining, which makes the same reward, you know, for...
Then you get into all that hoo-ha.
It's the same. But it's more work. I mean, the cheaper the price, yeah, it's more work with a membership because there's more people coming and going and leaving. And all of that is work too, which people don't realise. There's a lot of admin behind the scenes on top of just creating the content for everybody.
Yeah. So what does your next then? I think, you know, this is coming out beginning of August, September. I don't know. Do we still have that new pencil? Do you still have that new pencil case back to school feeling in September?
No, because I didn't have kids.
Still have it from you as a kid?
No. Do you think people do if they don't have kids? I think if you have kids, but if you don't, by now I'm 59. It's a long time since I was going to school. So no, I don't have it.
It's that change of the season and, you know, languid summer days that we have not had enough of in the UK.
I was going to say, we live in England. What are these languid summer days?
I was joking.
I get that feeling in spring. I get that, I get the spring feeling. Oh, let's do something. It's exciting. But now I get more of a kind of
winding down.
Winding down, wintry feeling.
Yeah, I quite like this. It's kind of like, all right, relax off. This is the time to get stuck down and get stuck in. The summer, the weather thing was funny though. So I had a meeting with Beck, who helps me with things and she's in the membership as well, but she's in Brisbane in Australia. And so we joined a Zoom call 8 o'clock yesterday morning for the UK, her evening. She's all wrapped up in cozies. I'm like, oh yeah, I just forget it's winter there. She said, yeah, it's chilly. It's like 18 degrees. And I'm like, it's 18 degrees here. It's supposed to be our summer. And I'm trying to pretend I'm okay in just a t-shirt. And actually I've got cold feet.
Well, that's funny because I always think of temperature in American Fahrenheit because I've been there so long. I still haven't learned centigrade. And so I'll say to our assistant for our other businesses in America, oh, it's boiling today. I'm like, it's 78 degrees. And she lives in North Carolina and she's like, 78 degrees is a really cool summer's day. What's wrong with you?
Yeah,
but we don't have air conditioning. It's different here. It's hard to describe how hot it can feel here at 78 degrees.
Yeah, we disagree. I'd have a bit more heat. But yeah, okay, so feeling the vibe, what's the months ahead gonna feel like then? You're feeling kind of smooth, it feels to me.
Yeah, I've got the book coming out and I've not done enough for that, speaking of taking on too much. So I've done all my pre-sales of signed copies and that went well, but now the publisher is selling it from October the 7th. And so I'm supposed to have done certain things, like sent them a list of local bookshops. I haven't done that yet. And I've just been sent a big pile of promotional bookmarks, which I have to go take round to various bookshops and art shops in the area. And I'll do that soon. But that's coming out October 7th. And I'll do some Zoom promotion for that probably. I've got to think about that. I've got my second course coming up. You know, it's fun. This is the problem with being so busy. I'll just do a quick interlude. When the book arrived yesterday, my copy, it was really exciting to open it.
Yeah.
I flicked through it and then I had to go get on with some other stuff and I haven't gone back and looked at it again. And I thought, I've always, when I was a kid, wanted to publish a book. And now I've done it and I haven't got time to appreciate it because I'm on to the next thing. That's a problem.
That's a problem.
But anyway, so the book will come out. I'll do the course. And then when the second course finishes at the end of October, it is painting time for me through winter for this exhibition.
Yeah.
And going out in winter drawing. I want to go back out and do some winter drawing of winter shapes, which I really like. So that'll be winter for me. That's what I have planned.
That sounds beautifully simple.
Yes, that's what I have planned. Let's see. Of course, I have the membership to keep going in all that time. And I'll, yeah. So what about you?
I just think, I say to myself, I'm just going to crack through this list of things to do. And then that'll be done by Thursday next week. And then I can.
Yeah.
But, you know, my priority is getting things ready for Open Studio. I have discovered a whole little stack of small paintings that I'd forgotten that I'd done.
Oh, good.
I'm not sure that they're ready yet. They were one of those, go down a route and then kind of life moved on a little bit. So this is why it always makes me laugh when people think I'm organised. Not really. Organised in places.
Maybe it's organised relative to other people in the art world. Maybe that's what it is. Not organised relative to an accountant, but organised relative to other artists.
Definitely would never have been an accountant in an alternative life. I can absolutely promise you that. But yeah, things, I think things happen when they need to. And when it gets, I'm quite good at prioritising when they need to, and I'm getting better at not rushing things and not pushing things, and I think that's a good thing rather than something to be feeling guilty about.
So that's not answered my question. What do the next few months look like for you?
Yeah, well, so the next few months is work for Open Studios and really concentrating on developing this new work, this new approach that I want to have. And I've got big canvases ready. And I'm not sure if I'll also end up doing work on paper, because I don't know, because I haven't started yet. But using Manchester Art Fair for that, and trying very hard not to get sidelined or distracted by all the, I should be doing this, I should be making a mini course on, you know, that keeps getting shifted. What can I say?
There's, you're only one person.
We all are. I think we all need to remember that we're only one. And your point earlier about not asking for help on things is a good point, but also that, you know, you can't do everything, so it's okay to let some things go. And, you know, this, what are you going to be doing this season? That's a good focus. That's a good chunk of time for me. Like the start of the year with yearly goals, great, but I know I still over, it doesn't matter, even if I cut them back, I still overestimate what I can do. Then other things come along, like you say, that, you know, are a nice surprise, like, you know, wasn't expecting, you know, this gallery in the Cotswolds. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
Don't know. That's a different thing.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I mean, this email from the lady at this other gallery, out of the blue, never spoken to her before. Yep. She turns out to have ordered my book and she listens to the podcast, and I didn't know, you know, you don't know who's paying attention to you in the background and what opportunities might come along. And so a lot of the opportunities that come along, though, to what we've been talking about aren't right. And it's learning to say no to the ones that aren't right. As you said about Manchester Art Fair, I initially said yes to that, thinking I was another person, like thinking I was someone else who would like that. And then remembering, no, I'm not. I don't want to do those art fairs. I never have. Why do I keep pushing myself into it? So saying no to that was a big thing, and getting them to give me my money back, which was a bit of a struggle, because it's not right for me. And you've got to start learning to know what that is. And that takes time, I think.
It does take time.
And you have to do the things that weren't right for you to figure out what is right for you.
Yeah, maybe that's the point of this. If there was a point to this conversation, perhaps if you've got to this stage.
If you're still here, well done. Thank you.
I tell you what I've been listening to. I've been listening to some sleep meditation podcasts. Maybe we should just rebrand it. Listen to random conversations until you fall asleep with boredom.
Worry, you know. You were going to say something.
I was going to say, I haven't told you this yet, but I've got some people lined up for guests.
Oh, good.
It won't just be us.
Good. I've asked a couple of people, but I haven't heard back yet. So that's right. Good.
Well, we should stop this now, wrap up, have that conversation with each other a little bit. And just say, you know, welcome back to everybody. I know that lots of you have been enjoying listening to some older episodes in the pause. So I bet that was quite funny to listen back to some of those. But, you know, this is what it is. Real life, turn up, talk shit.
Can I just do a quick what's inspired?
Yeah.
Because I really want to do this. My friend, people don't know this, but a friend of mine was diagnosed with cancer 8 weeks ago, and he died last week. And it's been really sad for all of us, but I just want to talk about him very briefly, because he was the most amazing person and taught me so many lessons. And he was an amazing person because he was gay, and he's 64 when he died. When he was a young man, he wasn't comfortable telling people he was gay. It was still in the days when you couldn't really say that.
It was illegal.
Yeah, and in his professional life, he worked at the council in quite a senior position, and he didn't tell anyone. My husband, who's his best friend, didn't know he was gay until he met me, and I said, "John's gay, right? You do know that?" And he was like, "No, he's not." And they eventually it came out, and Phil said to me, "I wondered why there were always these guys in our friend circle who came and went, and then another one would come and go." Anyway, but in his later life, when he retired from his job, which was about 8 years ago, he just became his true self. He was the most outwardly, sometimes the most campist, the most gregarious person you could ever meet. And he loved to party and go to concerts. And he was in his 60s, still going out every night until COVID. He was going out every night, seeing bands till 3 and 4 in the morning, doing God knows what, you know, and having the time of his life with his partner who loved the same life as him. And we used to kind of tease him, and we used to say that all the young kids at the concerts must be going, "Oh, granddad's here again. You know, what's granddad hanging out with us for?" When he passed away, his Facebook page is just a litany of tributes from young kids in bands who were saying that John inspired them, encouraged them, sometimes gave them money, you know, bought them things to help them got them gigs, introduced them to promoters in Manchester. He was Mr. Manchester music scene. And I didn't realize to what extent he was, even though he's just a fan, even though nobody was paying him anything. And there's so many people saying, John's the reason I'm still singing 8 years later. John's the reason that our band got this concert. And I realized what an amazing impact he had made on lots more people than just us, his friends. And that when we were laughing and saying, "Granddad, you know, granddad's showing up again," they were not thinking that. The young kids weren't thinking that. They were looking up to him, and he was mentoring them all. So he's left an amazing legacy. And I just wanted to say, RIP, John, we loved you.
Lovely.
That's it. So we've covered a whole range of topics this week, and we've talked about all sorts of things. We might have pushed some buttons. I'm sure I have. I usually do by accident, by blurting something out. And we'd love to know what you think about any of what we've said. So if you have any comments, you can find, we post this podcast on our websites, which are always in the show notes, but we also post it on Facebook, and that's where you can leave us a comment and we can actually get into conversation. So on Facebook, I am Louise Fletcher Art and Alice is Alice Sheridan Art. So you can find either of us on there and you'll find this podcast. You can drop us a comment and let us know what you think or what you're planning for the coming months.
Yeah, I would love to know. I think, you know, we spoke before we finished for the break that we might have a little bit of a review of the podcast, which we haven't got together and done yet. And I would love to know from you, you know, what you would like to hear. I'm not promising that we're going to deliver it.
We might say, oh, no, we're not doing that. But we will read what you suggest.
Yeah, but I think it is important. I mean, for us, you know, we do it and the podcast has clearly hit the right spot with a lot of you because it's still growing. You're still sharing. We're still really thankful. But it's not just about the fact that, you know, numbers are going up. Like we haven't brought in advertising or sponsorship or anything like that. It's not about that. It's the fact that if the numbers are going up, that means you're listening and that means you're finding it helpful and that means you're finding it useful. And as well as us just getting things off our chest, that's sort of what we want to do with it. It's just a way, it's our way, I suppose, of supporting and encouraging the artist community in a very natural and open way. But, you know, would love to hear. Do you want to have more chats, just chats with other artists? Does it want to be more learning? Do you want occasional shorter ones? Do you like the length of it? It would just be really great to just give us some feedback. And like I say, we don't promise that we'll listen to it, but because it's got to be.
We promise we'll listen, but we don't promise we'll act on it.
Okay, she got it better than me. The point is that I suppose what we're noodling towards and what we have definitely got better at since we started. Do you remember when we first recorded the very first one and we were so nervous and we edited out every... have you been back to listen to it?
No.
No, yeah, I haven't either. Point is that you move on. But I think what it does allow us to do is move closer to being all the time more true to ourselves or just showing up as you. And I think that's what we all need to do as artists, and it's not easy. Maybe that's the point of the podcast. So if that's you and you're listening and you've enjoyed it, lovely to have you back. Thank you for sharing, and let us know what you think, and we'll see you next week. Okay, bye
bye.